Tonight we'll be on 2 Corinthians chapter 8. I'll say this before I start to teach this tonight. This is a very difficult chapter. If you read it and your mind feels like it's twisted, I understand. The language is very, very difficult the way it's worded and the way that the Greek language puts sentence structure together. It's not the way we do, so they kind of shift some things in here, and they got to be shifted back over there so I can even understand, or you can understand what it means. And this was done in a 16th century style, which we don't do. So they changed places where we put nouns and verbs and adjectives and things. You know, we have positions, and they change them around in the way they did it. And so when they do it a different way than us, then it makes it sound like it's all broken up, and it can change the meaning of the word considerably. Very difficult chapter, so if it's a little bit confused, let the Spirit of God straighten it out for you a little bit, or ask a question, okay? But it is a difficult chapter. Probably I spent a lot more time than I normally do in this chapter because I just, you know, I could work through a verse and I'd have to watch that I didn't get off track, and I'd go into another verse beyond it and I'd say, wait a minute. If that's that and this is this, then something's got to be rearranged. Something's not right in there. The picture, the pattern don't work, you know. So it took a lot of time to put this together. So we'll see where we can go with it tonight. With God's grace and mercy, we'll get through it, won't we? Okay? Okay, again, chapter 8, 2 Corinthians, verse 1. Moreover, brethren, we do to you, to wit, of the grace of God bestowed upon the churches of Macedonia, how that in a great trial of affliction, the abundance of their joy and their deep poverty abounded to the riches of their liberality. For to their power I bear record, yea, and beyond their power they were willing of themselves, praying us with much entreaty that we would receive the gift and take upon us the fellowship and the ministry to the saints. And this they did, not as we hoped, but first gave their own selves to the Lord and to us, by the will of God, insomuch that we desired Titus that as he had begun, so he would also finish, and as in you the same grace also. Excuse me. Therefore, as you abound in everything, in faith and utterance and knowledge and in all diligence, and in your love to us, see that you abound in this grace also. I speak not by commandment, but by occasion, of the forwardness of the others, and to prove the sincerity of your love. For you know the grace of our Lord Jesus Christ, that though he was rich, yet for your sakes he became poor, that you through his poverty might be rich. And herein I give my advice, for this is expedient for you, who have begun before, not only to do, but also to be forward a year before. Now therefore perform the doing of it, that as there was a readiness to will, so there may be a performance also out of that which you have. For if there be first a willing mind, it is accepted according to that a man hath, and not according to that he has not. For I mean not that other men be eased and you be burdened, but by an equality, that now at this time for your abundance may be a supply for their want, and their abundance also may be a supply for your want, that there may be equality. As it is written, he that had gathered much had nothing over, and he that gathered little had no lack. But thanks be to God, which put the same earnest care into the heart of Titus for you. For indeed he accepted the exhortation, but being more forward of his own accord, he went to you. And we have sent with him the brother whose praise is in the gospel throughout all the churches, and not that only, but who was also chosen of the churches to travel with us with his grace, which is administered by us to the glory of the same Lord and declaration of your ready mind. Avoiding this, that no man should blame us in this abundance which is administered by us. providing for honest things, not only in the sight of the Lord, but also in the sight of men. And we have sent with them our brother, whom we have oftentimes proved diligent in many things, but now much more diligent upon the great confidence which I have in you. Whether any do inquire of Titus, he is my partner and fellow helper concerning you, or our brethren be inquired of, they are the messengers of the church and the glory of Christ. Wherefore, show ye to them and before the churches the proof of your love and on our boasting and our boasting on your behalf. Now, even reading this in the King James is difficult. It makes you struggle. Did you gather that? You can't just read it fluently because of the way it's the language is. Back to the first verse. He goes on, he ended up in the last chapter. He said, I rejoice because I have confidence in you in all. Not things, but in all. He said, I got confidence in you. And he says, moreover, brethren, we do you to wit. Does that make any sense to you? If it does, I'd like to see your mind. Because it's pretty twisted. It says, the words we do you to wit should say this. We do make known to you. So it should read, moreover, brethren, we do make known to you the grace of God. Correct? Bestowed or given, not the word bestowed isn't proper. It should be given, not on the churches, but in the churches of Macedonia. So let me read the whole thing again. Moreover, brethren, we do make known to you the grace of God given in the churches of Macedonia. What does Macedonia mean? Extended land. Wonder what that's talking about. Well, not necessarily. I think Paul is talking about something here, more about the minds that have been extended, the ones that have been opened up. Wonder who that might be. Absolutely, first fruit. Okay. But the Corinthians were given some mighty wonderful gifts, weren't they? But he's talking about the ones that can hear, okay? The ones that have went a little farther. See, if we were traveling the journey, most people won't expend a whole lot of energy traveling someplace, will they? You know, you're always going to have some that fall out first, and then some that fall out second, and then some will continue to the end, won't they? And I see this Macedonia is talking about to first fruit, the ones that have their land extended. What would that mean to you, what I said? Their land is extended. Their mind has been extended. It's been expanded and drawn out to understand the rest of it, the mind of Christ. Been opened up, absolutely. Okay? So when you see Macedonia, you wonder what's extended land mean? Well, it's talking about the mind. Because the promised land was the mind of Christ. Okay? And now we go into the second verse, and it says how. The word how shouldn't even be there. If it's talking about the grace, that's the thrust of this whole chapter. Grace. What does the word grace mean? A divine influence in your heart and a reflection of that into your lifestyle. So we're talking about people here that the grace is evident in their life because their minds have been extended, right? Been stretched out, opened up, so they can see this stuff. And so other people can see that in them. And he goes on and says this in verse 2. That in the great what? Literally test or trial, either one works there, of affliction. The word affliction is the word thlipsis, pressure. So he said that in the great test of pressure, the abundance of their joy and their extreme, not deep, but extreme poverty abounded into what? Or the abundance of their generosity. Did you get that? Their poverty, let me read it again. That it says the abundance of their, let me read the whole thing. Start over with verse 2. That in the great test or trial of pressures, the abundance of their joy and their extreme poverty abounded into the abundance of their generosity. So the things you went through, what did they do? They had extreme poverty in the natural, but what did it give them? It gave them something to give away. It gave them something that they could be generous with, which was the mind of Christ, the heart of the Father. The grace that was extended to them, they could extend to someone else. You see what I mean? So the extreme poverty they went through, the tests and the pressures that they went through, actually made them very wealthy spiritually. So they brought even though they were in poverty in the natural, what were they really? Rich. Spiritually, they were wealthy. They had something to give to somebody else, not just a bunch of stuff that's going to be used up anyway. Okay? Let me read the whole thing again. You stop me if you need before you go. That in the great test or trial of pressures, the abundance of their joy and their extreme poverty abounded to the abundance, where it says riches, it says abundance of their liberality, which is generosity. Okay? Verse 3 goes on, says it this way, not for, but because. Because to their ability, I bear record. Not power, but to their ability. We're dealing with something here to their ability, and I'll get back to it when we get on over on the other page here in verse about, what am I talking about? It's over on the next page here. We'll get to it in a few verses down there, 10 or 12 more verses. It'll come back to this right here. He says, because to their ability I bear record, and beyond their ability they were willing to what? Willing of themselves, should say, and beyond their ability, they volunteered. The word is volunteered. The words willing of themselves should be volunteered. They volunteered. They willingly gave of themselves. Okay? Praying, right? The word praying here is literally asking or desiring. Okay, they weren't down on their hands and knees with their hands clasped begging somebody to do something. They were asking or desiring us with much what? Entreaty? Well, the language can say this. With much persuasive discourse. With much persuasive discourse. They continued with much. It wasn't just saying it one time, was it? They were continually asking them to do that. That we would receive the gift and the fellowship or the communion of the service to the saints. So what they were saying, they were asking them over and over, will you please help us with the service to the saints? Okay? Can you imagine that? That they were asking, help us help someone else. And see, that's what he's witnessing to here. How much their love and their grace that they had, they wanted to give to someone else. Okay? And not as we hoped, but verse 5, but first gave their own selves to the Lord and to us what? Not by the will of God, but through the will of God. The word is dia, through the will of God. Verse 6, it says, in so much, that's not really a good word. The word in so much that, literally it should say, consequently, we, not desired, but we encouraged Titus. Okay? That as he had began in this way, he would also finish in you the same grace also. So he's saying what grace he had, he wants the same thing to be in you. That makes sense? He wants to impart the grace that God gave to him to someone else. If I don't receive grace from God, how could I give grace to anyone? It says in the scriptures, it says this. In the Bible, it does say this. If you don't give mercy and grace, you'll not receive it. See? You won't receive that mercy and grace. So I want to give grace to everyone. And since God gave me more grace than anybody deserved and more mercy, why wouldn't I have mercy and grace for everyone else? If he gave me more than anybody deserved, then I must have more than I need, so I must be able to give it away. Right? He gave me enough to give away. And I don't think you can run out of it anyway. Because it says in the Psalms that his grace and mercy endures forever. Okay? Okay, verse 7. Therefore, just as you abound in all, not everything, but all, in faith and utterance, the word utterance is logos, that's the word of God, and knowledge, and in diligence, and in your love to us, in order that you abound to this grace also. He's only talking about one grace. What is it? The grace of God. You have that divine influence in your heart and reflect it out into your lifestyle. So if you've received grace, somebody ought to be able to see it, shouldn't they? Verse 8, I speak not by commandment, but what? By occasion or through occasion of the forwardness of others and to prove the sincerity of your love. He said, I'm doing this to prove a point, the sincerity of your love. That's what he's telling them about it. Verse 9, because you know the grace of our Lord Jesus Christ, literally it should say, because you know the grace of our Lord Jesus Christ, because though he was rich, yet for your sakes he became poor, in order that you, through his or that one's poverty, through that one's poverty, you become what? The word might should be crossed out of that verse. See right near the end where it says might? That's an added word. So it should say, in order that you, through his poverty, become rich. Now, did he go through what he went through so maybe you could make it? Do you see what I'm saying about the doubt that this language puts into your mind? Maybe I can make it. Do you wonder why the church world is so confused? Maybe I'm going to make it. Maybe I'm not. It's because of those words like that that they've put the memory in their mind. And I kick every one of them out that I can find. See, kick them maybes and might and could, maybe could and should. No. He did something for a specific detail to come to pass. He died that we live. Did he say he died that we might live? He died, I live. End of discussion. No details more needed, is there? I don't need shoulda, couldas, or mights. You know, forget it. Beg your pardon? Instead. Yeah. We don't need any of that. He died instead of us, so I don't have to die now. End of discussion in that. Okay, into verse 10 we go now. And it says, in this, and it says, and herein, it should say, and in this I give advice or an opinion. Okay, I give my advice or an opinion, because this is expedient, it says in the King James, or this is profitable for you. He said, I'm giving you some advice that's profitable to you, who have begun already not only to do, but also to be what? But also to desire to do it a year ago. He said, I can see a year ago where you was at. You were desiring to do this a long time ago. Okay? Now therefore, perform the doing of it. He said, now go ahead and do what you started. What you desire to do, what's he telling you to do? You know, like Bill the Cable Guy says, get her done. Right? Get her done. If you got it to do, do it. Now therefore, perform the doing of it, that as there was a readiness or a zeal to do in this way, a performance or a completion also out of that which you possess. So he's saying what you have already possessed, God has already placed a deposit within each one of us, true or false. He placed a deposit of grace within us. His mercy, his love, because it said his love is shed abroad in our hearts. It's already been done. Okay, so grace and mercy and love and all these things have already been deposited. The word's already been written in our hearts according to his covenant, right? So everything's there. So he's saying now, according to what you possess, perform what you got to do. Now, did God send you out here without being prepared? If he called you, he also equipped you, didn't he? Okay. And if he equipped you, guess what else he's going to do? He's going to glorify you. Don't worry about it. Just do what you got to do. Use the tools that God has given you and go on with your life. Quit worrying about all the formulas and doctrines that everybody tries to give you. Take this word and let it work its magic. Magic may not be a good word, just a figure of speech. Take this word and let that word perform in you what it has to do. Don't worry about what people say, right? Let the word do its work. Verse 12. Because if there be what? Well, the word first is not correct. The word should be present. Because if there be present a willing mind, it is accepted according to that or precisely as a man possesses, and not precisely as that he possesses not. So what is he saying here? Remember what I said over here a while ago? He said in verse 3, he said, I bear record to their ability, right? You remember that? We just done in verse 3. He said, I'm bearing record to their ability. Okay? He knows it's there. And God placed it there. He said, because if there be present a willing mind. There's the prerequisite. A willing mind. That's not one locked up and says, I already know everything, is it? It's not the high-walled city. It's a teachable, moldable mind, a willing mind. I'm willing to give up anything that I think as long as I'm exchanging it for the truth of God. Correct? That's the way we have to look at it. It may break one of my toys, one of my idols in my mind, one of my views that I think is right, but I hope God breaks it. I know he will because he's already said he's going to. I'm confident in that. But that's what we have to say in our mind. I'm willing for God to come in and break all my idols just so long as I know the truth. That's all that matters. And that's what he's saying here. There must first be a willing mind. If there is a willing mind, it is accepted precisely as a man possesses. Okay? You can look in Luke 12:48, and I'll show you something. Luke 12:48. And it says this. Let me back up a little bit. Catch the context. Verse 47, let's say. And that servant which knew his Lord's will and prepared not himself, neither did according to his will, shall be beaten with many stripes. Okay? But he that knew not and did commit things worthy of stripes shall be beaten with few stripes. For to whomsoever or all that much is given, of him shall be what? Much required or demanded. And to whom men have committed much, of him they will ask far more. So he's saying, what you have is what you're required. Whatever God's given you, that's what you're required. He's not going to require from you something you don't have the ability to do. Can't, does he? No, he makes the deposit, and whatever he deposits, he expects that back, okay, with interest. He does collect interest, doesn't he, according to the parables. Okay? There's another passage, if you want to make that a reference, Luke 16:10 will go along with that, basically the same thing. So you can take a look at that later. I'm not going to break into that. Okay? So let me read verse 12 again. Because if there be present a willing mind, it is accepted according to what or precisely as a man possesses. So if God has given me much understanding, what's going to be required of me? See? And if he hasn't given me any understanding, what's he going to require of me? Now, do you know how many people I've heard say, don't tell me that. I don't know, but I don't want to know about it. Then I'm not responsible. Literally, I've heard people say that to me on many occasions. Don't tell me that, and then I'm not accountable for it. But let's just look at something here. Let me back up and find it. It's in Romans. Let me see. Oh, it's Romans. It's the first part of Romans. I don't know where it's at now. I'll get there in a second. In chapter 2 of Romans, verse 1. Therefore you are inexcusable, O humanity, whosoever you are that judges, because wherein you judge another, you condemn it yourself, for you that judges does the same thing. But let's go on down. I think I missed it again. It's in Romans 1. That wasn't the verse I wanted. Oh, okay. I know it's in Romans 1. Okay, here it is, verse 17 and 18 of chapter 1 of Romans. For in this is the righteousness of God revealed or remembered from faith to faith, as it is written, the just shall live by faith. For the wrath of God is revealed from heaven against all ungodliness and unrighteousness of men who hold the truth in unrighteousness, because that which may be known of God, right? That which is known of God, what should say, that which is known of God is apparent to them, because God, what? Has made it apparent to them. Because the invisible things of him from the creation of the world are clearly seen, being understood by the things that are made, that's us, creation, even his eternal power and what? Yeah, forget that Godhead thing, because it should say divine nature, so that they are what? Without excuse. Once God shows it, you can deny all you want, but God knows, don't he? That's the passage I was looking for. I know it was in the first part of Romans there. Okay. Go back to Corinthians again. Let's see, where was that? 13? Okay. Verse 13, because not that other men, I mean not that other men be eased and you be what? That word burdened is philipsis again. He said they shouldn't be eased and you be putting under pressure. He said, I'm not meaning that. But by equality, the word and shouldn't be there, but by equality. He said, I'm trying to make things equal here. I'm not trying to put a bigger load on somebody else than you. Okay? He said, I'm trying to get it to the place where you carry the same burden I carry, right? We assist each other. And if you put too much load on one person, what's going to happen? It's going to break them down, get a collapse. And that's not what Paul's after. He's trying to share this equally. He said, I'm looking for equality. Okay? And he says, by equality, now at this present time, your abundance, not may, there's that doubt word again, isn't it? But your abundance be not a supply, but the supply to their want. Okay? That your abundance now is a supply to someone else's want, correct? That their abundance also, cross out that may too, that their abundance also be a supply to your poverty. Okay? That their, cross out that may, that there be equality. If your abundance comes to me and my abundance comes to you, what are we going to have here? What are we going to say? Didn't it say in the book of Acts chapter 2 that they had all things in common? The last verse or two of second chapter of Acts. And they had all things in common. What is that? Equality, isn't it? Isn't that equality? That's grace. It's God's mercy and grace, isn't it? That everything is in common. We're the same way. Okay? Verse 15. As it is written, he that had gathered much had nothing over, and he that gathered little had no lack. You know where it comes from? Exodus 16, 18. Remember what we were talking about earlier? Yeah. Okay? So it's saying, I can go out here and labor all day long, and I can gather and gather and gather, but I'm really not going to have any excess. And there's others that God does not put out there to labor, but only for a few minutes. Remember the parable of the laborers? And they had the same wages, didn't they? And if God sends someone out there and they just gather a little bit, he said they're still not going to be in want. They're going to have what they need. Anymore. You can only get full. That's all you can have. You can't put sideburns on your head, can you? Keep your understanding in there. Like on a pickup truck and stack it up. You can't do that. Okay? So, whether you do a lot or you did little, what you're going to end up with? What you need. And if you get too much, guess what it's going to do? Take care of somebody else. And if you happen to turn around one of these days and end up in one of those that gathered a little bit, somebody else's abundance is going to come to you. That's what God's trying to teach. That's what Paul's trying to teach us here. Instead of hoarding everything up for ourselves, what should we do with it? Let it flow. Let it go. Who cares? Because God's the supply of all things anyway. If I try to dam it up, it's probably going to break the dam and flood me out anyway, and I'm not worried about it. That's right. And it comes from him. It's going back to him, ain't it? Okay. Verse 16. But thanks be to God, which put the same earnest care into the heart of Titus for you. And that's not what it says. You want to hear what it says? He said, but the grace of God, the word thanks is charis, grace. But the grace of God, which put the same earnestness into the heart of Titus concerning you. He said it was the grace of God, which we started out from the very beginning in the first verse about the grace of God. Weren't we talking about that? And here it is again. He said it's the grace, he said, but the grace of God, which puts the same earnestness into the heart of Titus concerning you. See, it wasn't Titus that did anything, was it? Even though he had his mind extended, okay, his land was extended to encompass more, his thinking, it's not about us, is it? It's about the knowledge of God. It's about the grace of God. And Paul says, it's not about Titus. It's about the grace of God that put it in his heart concerning you. It comes from the Spirit of God, the grace of God in your heart that makes you look to someone else to help them. Verse 17, because indeed he received the what? It says the exhortation, but it should say the encouragement. He did receive the encouragement, but being moved what? Being more what? Diligent, what it should say. Being more diligent of his own accord, or should be what again? Voluntary. But being more diligent voluntarily, he went to you. He received the encouragement, and because he was much more diligent, he voluntarily went to you. Paul's telling these Corinthians, he said he voluntarily came to you because of his diligence. He had a great zeal for those people. And we have sent with him the brother. Does anybody know who the brother is? No. No one really knows. Luke is who many people think it is. But there's not really any way to prove. There's no historical writings. I've looked through all kinds of books to study this verse out and find out. And guess what? There's a lot of different, some think it's Luke, some think it's John, some think it's Mark, some say Barnabas. There's several different people to think, but no one knows. Well, the reason they chose Luke was because Luke traveled with Paul extensively. So they think it might have been him, and he did write a gospel. When it goes, look what it says here. But we have sent with him the brother whose praise is in the gospel. Luke wrote a gospel, didn't he? Throughout all the what? Ecclesia, churches. The ecclesia, the called out ones. So his praise is in the gospel. Not in himself, but it's in the gospel. Well, but that's in everybody. But I mean, there was no name ever placed with it. There's no record, no historical writing through all the writings. Anybody knows for sure. There's a lot of supposition. No one knows for sure. And not that only, but who was also chosen by the churches to travel with us with this grace. He was chosen by the churches to travel with them with this grace, which is administered by us to the glory of the same Lord. Now, let me show you something. Here's an example of how the language is broken. Look at what I'm saying. Pay attention, because it's easier to understand if you can see this. When I read this verse 19, and I said, not that only, but who was also chosen by the churches to travel with us with this grace. See the comma? Now the next part is something added in there between this thought process before it's completed. Because if you would take the section out which is says, which is administered by us to the glory of the same Lord, if you would skip over that and just read it this way, start from the beginning again, say, and not that only, but who was also chosen by the churches to travel with us with this grace and declaration of your ready mind, and then add that back on. You see where I jumped over the section there? Can you see that? That's like you might as well say that's like being put in parentheses. That's a thought inside of a thought. Do you understand what I mean? That's why sometimes this reading gets very difficult, because he's making a statement, and in the middle of a thought process, he stops and puts another thought process in and goes back to the one he was talking on. Do you see what I'm talking about, Lloyd? That's why, you see it, Ed? That's why it's so difficult sometimes. You have to stop and look at this and see what he's doing. You could almost put those words in parentheses there, and it would separate it more. You see what I mean? Huh? Right. Right. Puts it in there and then goes on, and he puts something else in there and then goes on and finishes the one he was thinking of before. And if you don't take your time when you're reading this, it'll confuse you and just leave you in a jumble. And like I say, this passage of Scripture is really, really hard to go through. It's not a real easy passage to flow through. It's hard to read. Okay? So let me go back to verse 19 again. And not that only, but who was also chosen by the churches to travel with us with this grace, being the grace of God, which is administered by us to the glory of the same Lord, and declaration of your what? That word ready mind literally is zeal. And a declaration of your zeal. Can you see where ready mind could fit there? But literally it says zeal. I can see it's not that far off. The meaning is in the words. If you have zeal for something, that means your mind's into it. Okay? He said, avoiding this thing. Okay, now avoid this thing. So this should get your attention. He said, avoid this thing, didn't he? The word thing isn't there, but it should be. Avoiding this, or this thing, that no man should blame us in this abundance which is administered by us. He said, don't blame us if we've got a whole bunch of stuff to give away. We're administering this stuff. Everybody was bringing their stuff in, their liberality. They was giving it in to give out. He said, don't blame us because we got a bunch of stuff just because we're in possession of it right now. You see what I mean? It'd be like somebody come in and pile this room full of money and somebody say, what are you doing hoarding the money? I'm not hoarding the money. I'm trying to figure out how to get rid of it. You got to hold on to it until you get it where it's supposed to go. Kind of like last week when I said I found the $100 bill. I held on to it till I knew where it should go. There's an old writing, if you care to look it up, it's on the internet, you can find hundreds of pages, web pages on it, I'm sure. Lots of writings about it. It's called the Didache. I brought it in here once before and showed a lot of people. I don't know if you guys have seen it or not. It's called the Didache, and the word Didache means the teaching of the 12. Okay? Wonder who that might be written in the first century. It was the disciples, and they wrote 16 articles about things that you should do. Because most people couldn't read, they had to condense things down, make it very simple. One of the articles said this, and it stuck in my mind because it makes so much sense. Today, the church world says, somebody needs something, just reach your pocket and throw money at them. Well, the Didache says this, hold your alms until it sweats in your hand. What do you think that means, Ed? Hold your money in your hand till it sweats in your hand. What you're going to give away, hold it until it sweats. Now, how long would you have to hold it to make it sweat? A while. You see what I'm saying? He's saying, don't be in a hurry to give things away. Make sure you're giving it the right place before you give it away. Because none of us have the resources just to give to everybody that has need, do we? So he's saying, that's what they taught him. Don't be quick to just throw your money out there because you see a need. Find out if that's what God wants first. Hold on to it until you know it's going to the right place. Yep, that's it. D-I-D-A-C-H-E, right? Okay. You can find it on the web. You can find it in encyclopedias or stuff. It was an old writing. They searched for hundreds of years, tried to find the whole thing, and they finally found a complete writing. They found pieces and talking about it in other writings. Finally, they found a complete one, and they got it out. Now it's everywhere. It's been verified by hundreds, literally over 100 theologians of being an authentic document. So, and you know what? It'll tear the church world up when they read that. Because it tightens them up, I'm going to tell you. Tightens them up. It says, if any man says he's a prophet, and comes to you in the name of the God and says, I'm a prophet, a man or a woman. He said, and they stay more than 3 days, they're a false prophet. If any man come to you in the name of God and ask for money, he's a false prophet. That's what they taught in the first century. You know what that does to most churches and ministries running around out here today? Go get that out and read it for them. Reveals things, don't it? Sure it does. Okay, where did I leave off? 20, I'd finish with 20 there, okay. Verse 21, providing for honest things. It's not what it says. It says, taking thought for honorable things. Take thought for honorable things. Not only in the sight of the Lord, but also in the sight of men. What's he thinking? What do you think he's trying to tell you? Take thought of honorable things. I'm going to tell you what I see in it. I'm not talking about the language. I'm just saying, take thought for honorable things. As a man thinketh in his heart, so is he. So if I think on honorable things, guess what I'm going to do? I'm going to do honorable things. And I think thinking on honorable things in itself is not enough. You see what I mean? I can think about something, but if I do something different, then what good does the thinking do me? But if I think the honorable things, I'm going to also do the honorable thing, correct? So he says, taking thought for honorable things, not only in the sight of the Lord, but also in the sight of men. So just because I think God's looking at me on Sunday morning or Thursday evening, I'm going to be a good guy. Think about good things. But when I'm around people, I'm going to be different. They got a word for that in the Bible. You know what it is? Hypocrite. We got that picture over on the wall behind Ed over there. And it says, character is who you are when no one is watching but God. So everyone I encounter, I want them to see God in my actions. True or false? I want everyone to see God in my actions. But you know what? When God is acting things through you, many times people won't like that. They don't like God in your life. They would rather see you doing things like they do so they feel comfortable where they're at. If you do things, godly things, it brings a light upon them they don't like. They're very uncomfortable. Heaps coals of fire upon your head. Scripture says in another place, they think it's strange when you don't run an excess and riot with them. They don't know, they want to know why you don't act like we do. Well, if I am a godly man, I should be acting like a godly man. True or false? If I'm a godly person, then that's what I should act like. No excuses.
Is that word
honorable? Mm-hmm. Where it says honest, mm-hmm. Should be honorable, yeah. Verse 22. And he says, and we have sent with them our brother, whom we have oftentimes proved diligent in many things, but now much more diligent upon the great what? The word confidence is literally trust. The great trust that is in you, of this great trust that is in you. He said, we sent our brother and we have a great trust in him. Okay? If concerning Titus, my partner and fellow helper to you, if our brethren be inquired of, they are the what? What are they? Let's see. Messenger, what would you think that word would be? Beg your pardon? Well, the word agalos, which is translated messenger, and sometimes mistranslated angel, okay, agalos, is not the word here. It's apostolos. That's right. He said, because they are what? They're not messengers, but they're apostles of the church, of the churches, and they are the glory of Christ. See? Here's the problem I have with apostles, prophets, evangelists, pastors that teach. Okay? And I'm talking about the way humanity views this. It's about them being some great man or woman. It's not about that. He said these apostles, these messengers to the churches, are the glory of Christ. And when they run around and exalt themselves of being some great thing, that's not glory to Christ. That's a man trying to steal the glory of Christ. It is definitely not an honorable thing. And see, that's the problem I have when these people run around. I'm a bishop. I'm an apostle. I'm a prophet. I'm an evangelist. I'm a pastor. I'm a teacher. Won't they shut their mouths and be sons of God like they are? If they're truly what they say they are, they would not be telling you about it, would they? You don't have to prove a point. I found this out years ago. When people want authority, you know what they usually do? They try to take it. If you truly have authority, someone gives it to you. If I try to convince you that I have authority, I don't have any. You see what I mean? But if I have authority, it's because God has placed it within me and you have recognized it. That's the only way I can have authority. I can't make anybody do anything. Don't try. Don't want to try. I got enough responsibility in taking care of myself. Don't you? I don't need to take care of nobody else. If God wanted me to be taking care of you, He'd probably connect us together at the hip or something. Then I could watch you day and night, couldn't I? He didn't do that, so guess what? I'm not watching anybody. I'm getting my act together. Okay? That's the way it's supposed to be. Okay. Verse 24. Wherefore you show to them, this is what Paul's saying now, you show to them and in the presence of the churches the proof of your love and on our boasting and of our love concerning you, okay? This is where this is one of those things, again, where the language is, he starts something, stops, puts another thought in, and comes back to the first thought. You have to watch this because the translation will make your head hurt, okay? I'll show you how he did it. It says, wherefore you show to them, comma, and before the churches, comma, the proof of your love and of our boasting concerning you. So look what he says. He says, show to them and before the churches, comma, the proof of your love, and that proof of your love, he's added in there, of our boasting on your behalf or concerning you. The way that this thing is rendered by the King James writers can absolutely twist your mind when you try to read it. I'd say most people that try to read this Bible, the biggest concern or complaint that I hear from people that read the Bible, because everybody tells them, oh, King James is the only one. They can't understand the writing because it was written in a style that we do not talk. The structure of the sentences are not the same. So we try to read it with our own understanding and it twists and turns everything upside down. So there's a major confusion, isn't there? And I can't find anywhere in the history, even in this book, where Jesus said, thee or thou, or us or themeth or weeth or anything else. You know what I'm saying? That's 16th century English. It was spoken 1,600 years after that, when this thing was written. 1,600 years later, that's the way they talked. Jesus spoke in Aramaic, Greek, Hebrew, Chaldean. He spoke in those languages. That ain't what this is it? This is 16th century English. I hope people understand that, because it'll sure make it easier on you.